Welcome, everyone. This will be a short lecture on May 19th, 2021, introducing handouts 6 and 7 for Linguistics 181. Handout 6 is on consonants. Handout 7 is on alphabets. These follow handout 5, which is on vowels. Together, these three handouts give us a dense overview of the symbols that we use to write Neuchonalphin English. We will be describing consonants mainly according to three different features: place, manner, and phonation. Consonant place refers to where in the vocal tract it is made. For example, at the lips, at the teeth, at the tongue root, or at the glottis. Consonant manner refers to what kind of sound it is. Does it involve just shaping the air subtly? Does it involve blocking the air completely? Or does it involve blocking the air partially in order to make noise? These are different consonant manners. Last, consonant phonation refers to what the glottis or vocal cords are doing. You'll remember that when we talked about vocal anatomy, we talked about the voice box or larynx. This is where our voice comes from. We make our voice by exhaling from the lungs, and that air causes the vocal cords to vibrate. The vocal cords are two flaps of skin inside the larynx or voice box. But voice is only one of the things we can do with our vocal cords. We can also use them to create aspiration, and we can use them to create glottalization. So voicing, aspiration, and glottalization are all things we do with our voice box, with our larynx. And together we call these things phonation. Now at the top of this handout, there's some very dense information about different kinds of consonants. We divide consonants into two main groups, obstruents and resonants. And within each of those groups, there are many subtypes of consonants. For example, obstruents include spirants, stops, and affricates. Resonants include nasals, approximants, liquids, and glides. I will not be going through these in detail today because we'll do that again on Saturday. I want to go straight to some examples from Neuchonalphin English of different kinds of consonants. Let's take a look at example one. In the rows of this table, we have several different kinds of consonants, which are called stops, fricatives, affricates, nasals, liquids, and glides. And then there are some examples from both English and Neuchonalphin of words that start with these kinds of sounds. For example, the English words tubby, purity, and collect start with the t, p, and k sounds. These all happen to be what linguists call stops. That means that they completely stop the flow of air very briefly. If you say to yourself the t sound, t, or the p sound, p, or the k sound, k, you'll find that the air stops very briefly, only for about 10 milliseconds. But that's what makes these sounds distinctive. Some examples of Neuchonalth words with stops include pu, which means gun, tatus, which means star, and ieh, which means big. Each of these words starts with a stop. So pu starts with p, p, tatus starts with a glottalized t, t, and ieh starts with a glottal stop. P, t, and glottal stop are all stops. Next, we have some examples of fricatives. The English words shine, feel, honey, and so all start with fricatives. Fricatives have in common that they do not stop the air, but they do create an obstruction in the vocal tract that causes noise. Try saying the first sound of shine, shh, or the first sound of feel, or the first sound of honey, or if so, in all of these sounds, the air keeps flowing, but it's noisy. That's because we're almost closing the vocal tract, but not all the way. Here are some Nuchonalth words with fricatives. Suchk starts with a fricative. Suchit starts with a fricative. Hawish starts with a fricative. I'm going to skip affricates for now. And let's talk about nasals. Nasals are sounds that are made with air flowing through the nasal cavity. And the two main nasals in most human languages are M and N. A couple of English words that start with nasals are needy and mermaid. Some Nuchonalth words with nasals are mamati, nunuk. Mamati, nunuk. You might not have thought before that nasals involve airflow through the nasal passages, but there's a very easy way to test this. Try saying M and then plugging your nose. You can't do it. It stops the sound, right? Try saying an N. That shows you that the air is flowing through your nose, right? If you plug your nose, you can't make the sound anymore. Those are nasal sounds. And that is an important class of sounds in Nuchonalth that we'll have reason to talk about more later. There are also sounds that we call liquids and glides, but I'm going to skip over these for now. Next, the next notes on the handout refer to consonant place, that is, where in the vocal tract is it made? Let's go through the places in the vocal tract where we can make sounds. Bilabial sounds are made at the lips. Bilabial means two lips. So P, B, and M are all bilabial sounds. Labiodental sounds are made with a lip and the teeth. F and V are labiodental. Nuchonalth does not have labiodental sounds. English does. English has F and V sounds, but Nuchonalth does not. Interdental sounds are made with the tip of the tongue between the teeth, th. These are the th sounds, th and th. English makes interdental sounds, Nuchonalth does not. Alveolar sounds are made with the tongue tip against the alveolar ridge, t, d, n, s. These are all alveolar sounds. Tip of the tongue, right behind the teeth, t, d, s, n. Postalveolar sounds are made with the tip of the tongue a little further back. Ch, j are postalveolar. Both English and Nuchonalth have the ch sound. Ch. Palatal sounds are made against the hard palate. That's the part of the roof of your mouth that has bone under it. If you feel the roof of your mouth in the front, you should feel that it's really hard and bony. There's bone right under the skin there. But if you move your, if you feel the back of the roof of your mouth towards the back, it's much softer, right? That's the velum. There's no bone, just skin and muscle. So sounds made against the hard palate are called palatal. And an example of that is the y sound, the y sound, y, y. That's made against the hard palate. An example of a velar sound is k, g. The K and G sounds, K, G. Those are made against the soft palate. Those are called velar sounds. Uvular sounds are made a little bit further back. They're made with the back of the tongue against the top of the throat. K, K. The Nuchonalth Q sound, K, as in kawi, salmonberry, is made with a Q. That's a uvular sound. The reason they're called uvular is because the tongue is pressing against the uvula. The uvula is that little dangly piece of skin in the back of your throat. Uvula is Latin for little grape. That's called the little grape. And we make the Nuchonalth Q sound by pushing our tongue against the uvula. Kuh. Nuchonalth has several uvular sounds. English does not. Last, glottal sounds are made at the glottis. The glottis is the name for the space between the vocal cords. So your voice box or larynx is a boxy organ. It has two folds of skin called vocal cords, and the space between the vocal cords is called the glottis. And there are two important sounds made at this place: glottal stop, which sounds like and H, which sounds like These are both made at the glottis, that is, the space between the vocal cords inside the larynx. I'm about to take you again to our mid-sagittal diagram. You should see our course webpage. Go down to Images, mid-sagittal diagram, and you'll see it says SAMI at the end there. That's probably an easier way to remember this. Remember when we looked at this before, I told you when linguists draw the vocal tract, we always draw it with the person facing to the left. And some people started giving this person a name. They started calling him Sammy. So Sammy is this diagram of the vocal tract. And what's cool about this resource is that you can make the articulators do different things. So here I'm playing with the lips. I can make the lips spread apart. I can make the lips come together. I can bring the lower lip to the upper teeth. That's where it goes when we say the F sound. F, lower lip to upper teeth. F. Or I can open them up again. Now we can look at the different places that the tongue can touch. So we talked about alveolar consonants. T, D, N, S. These are alveolar sounds. They're made with the tongue tip against the alveolar ridge, which is that bony ridge right behind the upper teeth. Do you see what I'm doing? T. Okay. Now, to make a Y sound, our tongue goes up to the hard palate. Do you see the tongue doing that? That's the tongue going up to the hard palate where it goes to make the Y sound. Y. Okay. How about a K sound? K, K, K. To make the K sound, the tongue goes up to the soft palate. That's the soft part of the roof of your mouth. And to make a Q sound, which is used in Nunchaknoth but not in English, the tongue goes back to the uvula. K, K. You see that? So at the very least, this can help you learn these technical terms: bilabial, alveolar, velar, uvular. But I think it'll also, the more importantly, it'll help you visualize what's actually happening inside your mouth. It would be really convenient if we could use X-rays for this, because X-rays can show us very clearly what's going on inside someone's vocal tract. Unfortunately, too many X-rays give people cancer, which is why we don't use them to look more than we have to. We're now looking at page 12. This is the second page on handout 6. In diagrams 2, 3, and 4, we have a SAMI diagram showing the vocal tract, and it shows the IPA symbols for some important sounds, and each symbol is written roughly where the articulators are moving in order to make that sound. Let's go through each one of these so you can start to visualize which actual sound each of these symbols represents. Okay, we're going to start with diagram 2, which is the plosives. The P sound is made at the lips. Say puh, puh. You should feel your lips coming together. The T sound is made with the tongue tip. T, t. The next symbol represents the ch sound, which we write is, with a CH in English. Ch, ch. That's a little, just a little further back than a T. T, 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 tip of the tongue. Ch, 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 slightly further back. Now K, 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 that's made with the back of the tongue against the soft palate. K, k, k. Now make a Q. K, k, k. We don't use this sound in English, but we use it a lot in Nunchaknoth. K, k. That's made with the back of the tongue against the uvula. At the very bottom of that vocal tract, you see the symbol for glottal stop, which looks like a question mark without the dot. That represents the sound that goes like this. when I say, I am closing my vocal cords and then opening them again. And you should be able to feel it down here. That happens inside your glottis. What these sounds all have in common, p t ch k k a, is that they are plosives. That means that they stop the flow of air for a brief moment and then release it again in a very small explosion. Do you hear that small explosion in p t ch k k? It's not a big explosion, just a tiny explosion. But that's where the word plosive comes from. Now let's look at spirants. Spirants are hissy sounds. When we make spirants, we move our articulators, but we don't close the vocal tract all the way. We just close it enough to make noise. The first spirant is F, F, F. The F sound is a spirant made by bringing the lower lip against the upper teeth. F, F. That next symbol, which looks like a circle with a horizontal line, that symbol is called theta, and it represents the th sound. Th, the th, which we write as th in English. Th. That's made with the tip of the tongue between the teeth. Th. Th. Next, the s sound is made with the tip of the tongue. S. S. Specifically, it's an alveolar sound, which means it's made with the tip of the tongue against the alveolar ridge, which is that bony ridge behind the teeth. The next sound is sh, sh, that tall, skinny S shape that represents the sh sound, and it's made just a little further back than S. Next, at the same place as K, is the h sound, h, which we write with an X, both in the IPA and in Nuchanoff. H. English does not use this sound, but Nuchanoff does. And at the uvula, Nuchanoff uses the ch sound. Ch. In Nuchanoff, we write that with an X underdot, and I usually call it the back X. Ch. Last, at the glottis, is where we make the h sound, the H. Ch. Both English and Nuchanoff use the H sound. I'm going to skip diagram four, which is about nasals, but be aware that all these same places where we can make plosives and spirants in our vocal tract, we can also make nasal sounds. The last bit of handout six is about phonation. Phonation has to do with what we do at our larynx. So our larynx has the vocal cords, and I believe I mentioned last weekend that the original purpose of our vocal cords, the purpose that they serve in most animals, is to prevent food and drink from going down the windpipe, right? When we're eating and drinking, the vocal cords close to protect the windpipe so that food goes down the esophagus instead. But when we breathe, the vocal cords open up to make sure that air can get in and out of our lungs. However, the vocal cords also happen to be good for making voice. And human beings are not the only animals that have a voice. Lots of animals use their voice, right? And most animals make voice by vibrating their vocal cords as they breathe out. So air comes out of the lungs, through the trachea, up through the larynx. And as air comes through the larynx, the vocal cords are held loosely so that they vibrate. And when the vocal cords vibrate, it sounds like this. Those are vibrating vocal cords. Now, if I hold my vocal cords stiff as I breathe out, it sounds like this. That's the sound we know as the H sound. And the glottal stop is yet another thing we can do with the vocal cords. If I close the vocal cords completely and then open them, it sounds like this. And that's the sound that we write with the glottal stop symbol. Now, here's something really interesting about phonation. So, phonation is the general term for things we do with the vocal cords. And we just talked about how our vocal cords are capable of doing three or four different things. So, something that a lot of human languages do is they use the vocal cords to multiply the number of consonants that they have. For example, English has the consonants p, t, ch, k. Now I'm looking at example five, and in that you'll see the IPA symbols for the plosive sounds p, t, ch, k. These are voiceless plosives. Voiceless means the vocal cords are not vibrating. Plosives means they stop the air briefly and then release it. P, t, ch, k. But English can also pronounce these voiced. So if we say these sounds with vibrating vocal cords, they sound like b, d, j, g. And in English, p and b are considered two completely different sounds. Even though they're nearly identical, p and b are both made with the lips. They're both plosives, but the p sound is made with resting vocal cords, whereas the b sound is made with vibrating vocal cords. So what English is doing here is it's using phonation to double the number of consonants. This is a very important point that may take you a few minutes to grasp. Right, in English, p and b are considered two different sounds. There are human languages where p and b are considered the same sound. Hawaiian, for example, has no distinction between p and b. English does have a distinction between p and b. Now let's look at example six. Example six shows us some of the consonants of Nuchanoth. Nuchanoth does, unlike English, Nuchanoth does not use voicing in consonants, but it does use glottalization. Glottalization means the vocal cords are brought together. In Nuchanoth has the plain consonants p, t, t, ts, ch, k. I'm reading the first row in example six. These are plain plosives. P, t, t, ts, ch, k. In addition, Nuchanoth can pronounce all of these sounds glottalized. That means that the vocal cords close and then the whole larynx goes up a bit, which increases the air pressure in the mouth, which makes the explosion of the plosive a little bit stronger. Plain P sounds like p, p, but glottalized P sounds like I'm raising my glottis to increase the air pressure in my mouth just a little bit, and that makes the sound a little bit stronger. Plain T sounds like t, t. Glottalized T sounds like t, t. Plain lambda sounds like t, t. Glottalized lambda, t, t. And so on. And just as in English, p and b are two different sounds, in Nuchanoth, p and p are two different sounds. For example, the word for damp in Nuchanoth is pasuk, pasuk, and that starts with a plain p, pasuk, pasuk. But the word for ear is p-e, p-e, and that starts with a glottalized p, p-e. So, some understanding of phonation can help you to grasp this very important concept that a human language relies on having a certain number of sounds. Some of these sounds are consonants, which are made by blocking or partially blocking air through the vocal tract. And lots of languages double or triple the number of consonants that they have by using phonation. English uses voicing to distinguish plain and voiced consonants. Nuchanoth uses glottalization to distinguish plain and glottalized consonants. Now, one exercise on homework three is going to be exercise 17. For exercise 17, you're going to describe every consonant at the beginning of a new Chonoth word in example one and identify that consonant's place, manner, and phonation. So, for example, we're looking at example one on handout six. The first new Chonoth word here is pu, meaning gun. You're going to look at the first sound of pu, which is p, 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 p. And your job is to identify p's place, manner, and phonation. The place of p is bilabial. It is made at the lips, p, p. The manner of p is stop or plosive. You can use either term. Stop or plosive is the manner of p. Its phonation is plain. It is neither voiced nor glottalized. It is just plain. And don't worry, we'll talk more about exercise 17. That's just a brief introduction. We're now going to go on to handout 7. This will just be a quick introduction to handout 7, which is about alphabets. And I love alphabets, so I'm very excited about to talk about this handout. I have a bit of graphomania. I just love writing symbols. This has helped me learn several different alphabets. Whenever I study a new alphabet, I keep writing it over and over again until I've memorized it. I highly recommend that to you as a way of learning the new Chonoth alphabet and/or the IPA if you haven't already. But I understand that not everyone has my same graphomania. We're gonna have a very quick crash course in the history of the English alphabet and the history of the new Chonoth alphabet. In one, I've laid out the modern English alphabet. The modern English alphabet consists of 26 letters, each of which has a capital form and a lowercase form. You might also have heard it called the Roman alphabet or the Latin alphabet. That's because English got its alphabet from the Romans, from the Roman Empire. This alphabet is basically that was used by the Romans, whose empire flourished from about 100 BC to about 400 AD. The Roman Empire had a huge impact economically, culturally, militarily throughout Europe. And we still feel in Europe and all over the world the effects of the Roman Empire. And the alphabet that we use is one of those. However, the alphabet that the Romans used didn't have 26 letters. It had, I believe, 23 letters. They did not use W, J, or U. Those letters were added later because after the fall of the Roman Empire, the alphabet continued to be used across Europe, including for languages that were unrelated or distantly related to Latin. English is, in fact, distantly related to Latin, but not closely. English and Latin aren't that similar. For example, the Latin language had no need for the letters J and W, but English does. And so these letters were introduced during the Middle Ages and the Enlightenment. However, you've probably noticed, since you've all learned to read and you all speak English and you can all read and write it, you've noticed that the English alphabet really isn't adequate to write the English language. And basically, this is because English has about 36 sounds, but our alphabet has only 26 letters. We don't have enough letters to write all the sounds. That's the basic problem. And this is why English spelling is such a mess. This is one reason why English spelling is such a mess. Another reason is that we haven't changed it very much in the last 1,000 years. That is also a problem. So when linguists want to talk about the sounds of a language, often they don't use the orthography. Let's talk about what an orthography is. You'll see alphabet and orthography defined at the top of handout 7. An alphabet is basically what you think it is. It's a set of symbols for representing the sounds of a language. An orthography is a standardized or official way of writing a language. Now, English spelling is an orthography. There is a right and a wrong way to spell English words. And by right and wrong, I just mean right or wrong according to the dictionary. I use my dictionary all the time, especially when I'm checking my Canadian spelling. I grew up in the United States, I learned American spelling, and now I live and work in Canada, where the spelling system is nearly identical but has some subtle differences. So I often have to go to my Canadian dictionary to check how words are spelled in Canadian orthography, which is almost but not quite identical to American orthography. So orthography is a standardized or accepted or correct, and I'm putting that in quotes, way of writing or spelling. The English orthography, as I've said, is not adequate to represent the sounds of English. So when linguists want to talk specifically about the sounds of English, we do not write in English spelling. We write in a phonetic alphabet, and the one that is usually used is the IPA, that is the International Phonetic Alphabet. In examples 2 and 3, you see the consonants and vowels of English written in the IPA. It'll be convenient if you decide to go on to study linguistics to know all of these IPA symbols and what they represent. Most of you are not interested in linguistics in general. Rather, you're interested in how linguistics can help you understand, learn, and teach Nuchanov. So most of you don't need to memorize the IPA. You just want to know how to look it up when you need to. So I'm not going to say much more about the symbols in 2 and 3, but I highly recommend that you take the time to understand how each one of these is pronounced. And we will go through it more carefully on Saturday. Now let's take a look at example 4. Example 4 gives all of the sounds of Nuchanov in an alphabetical order, whereas the sounds of English are laid out in a technical way in 2 and 3, the sounds of Nuchanov are laid out in an arbitrary alphabetical order in example 4. Every sound is written 3 different ways. In the first row, we have the way that sound is written in the Nuchanov alphabet. For example, the first 6 sounds are a, or short a, a, or long a, ts, which is the plain c, ts, which is the hard or glottalized c, ch, which is c wedge, and ch, which is hard or glottalized c wedge. Those are the first 6 sounds, and the first row shows how those are written in the Nuchanov alphabet, which I think most of you are familiar with. The second row shows how those same sounds are written in the International Phonetic Alphabet. A, a, ts, ts, ch, ch. Last, there's a row called the Rival Whalers. The Rival Whalers was an important paper that was published by Edward Sapir in 1924. Edward Sapir started studying Nuchanov around 1910. He came to Port Alberni and he worked with fluent speakers that he was able to find, the most important of which was Sayachapis, who was an old Tshotsh man who was monolingual in Nuchanov. Nuchanov was his only language. He did not speak English. Therefore, his Nuchanov was pure, genuine, if you like. At any rate, it had no interference from English. The Rival Whalers row in Table 4 shows how Sapir wrote Nuchanov when he published that paper. I'm going to show you what that looks like right now. This is The Rival Whalers, which is an article that Sapir published in 1924. He collected this story from Psychippus, and this is how he wrote it out. Now, I think most of you know how to read Nuchanoth, but you'll probably find this difficult to read because this does not use the alphabet that we use today. Can anyone read that first word? The one that's defined, now trained secretly for success in so and so. This is Usumchuk. Usumchuk. You might have heard of Usumch. Usumch is the way hunters, whalers, and anyone doing something important prepares, goes through a ritual to prepare for what they're going to do. That's what Usumch is. So Usumchuk means someone was doing that preparation. The second word is Ma'uk. Ma'uk means a gray whale, which is also called a California whale. Same species. The next word is Ihtup. Ihtup, which means whale. Sorry, in this case, humpbacked whale. But it also means whale in general. And the fourth word is Qualsits. Qualsits, which is a man's name. So the first sentence says, Osimchut Ma'uk Ihtup Qualsits. The man named Qualsits was training in order to go after gray whales and humpback whales. The reason I showed this to you is that a lot of people find it surprising to see that the alphabet that we use today to write Nuchanov did not exist 100 years ago. This is how Sapir was writing Nuchanov in 1924. Okay, let's jump forward 15 years. This is Nootka Texts, which was published in 1939. So this was edited by Sapir and his student Morris Swadesh. And this volume presents 44 texts in Nuchanov. And here's the text on the very first page. This is the story, Qeyihtaqaqeechtanaqmis, which means what mosquitoes are made out of. And I think you'll find this significantly easier to read. It's still not the modern Nuchanoth alphabet, but it's almost the modern Nuchanoth alphabet. Take a look at the first three words of the text. The first word is chief was, they say. Can anyone read that? We're looking at the first sentence of the story, What Mosquitoes Are Made Of, and those three words are In other words, there was a chief who had a daughter. What are some differences you see between the alphabet used here and the alphabet that you're familiar with? So you've just pointed out two subtle differences between the 1939 alphabet and the alphabet that we use today. One is that where we write the letter U today, Sapir wrote the letter O. Another is that in modern Nuchanoth, we write long vowels with a double letter, A, I, U. But Sapir wrote long vowels with a dot after the vowel. So he wrote A dot, I dot, U dot. Last, here is Dot Akspa. Dot Akspa is a very important book that was published in 1991. It was called a dictionary, but it's not really what linguists consider a dictionary because it doesn't have detailed definitions. What it does have is a bunch of words, about 2,000 words, and each word is written in several dialects. So, for example, let me look for a better example here. Here we go. So I'm looking on page 27 of Dot Daksapa, and the first word on this page is the word for deer. Starting with in the upper left, the DT dot word for deer is buwach. Buwach. The Tshat and Tukwat word for deer is Atush. Atush, starting with a pharyngeal. In every other dialect, the word is Muwach. Muwach. So we have Buwach, Atush, and Muwach. These are words for deer across Nuchanoth dialects. And this is the alphabet that we use today. So the Tataxpa is important first because it provides lots of useful information about several dialects, but second because it introduced the modern Nuchanoth alphabet. The modern Nuchanoth alphabet developed from the one originally used by Sapir between 1910 and 1924. It was further developed into the 1939 Nootka texts. The Nootka texts had an alphabet that is almost the one we use today, but with a few small differences that we just looked at. The modern Nuchanoth alphabet was introduced and established in the 1991 Ataxipa Dictionary. And that's as far as we'll get in handouts 6 and 7 today.